It's a question for Ati. The first thing I remember from reading Wendy Sandler's book is that sign language is not mime, it's not pantomime. And seeing the restaurant scene, in particular the waiters, there was something in the vibe that really reminded me like classical mime. So just some comment about this.
I guess a question that goes to both talks, but it came specifically seeing the Adi's doing the finger sign. So this notion of emergence, and also I think it's like this idea of, it's interesting the passage from non-linguistic to linguistic, and to what extent that actually could be both on behavioral level, phenomenological level, and then also maybe EEG or otherwise to look at actually when things emerge. So I think I was really curious about the experience of that person. You know, is it a sign emerging? Is a sign already there and prepared slowly to be shown? And I think also, I'm not a musician, but I feel that some similar questions can be asked musically with respect to certain conventionalized jazz choices. How do they emerge?
So I had the same question as Lior, exactly the same question. I feel the same way that the last one was pantomime. But that's not my question. I'm just saying I think it's a
better the waitress.
Point. Sorry?
The waitress.
Well, this last scene in particular was very much like, for me, a pantomime, the more than sign. But what's the nature of the interaction with the audience? So if you can't hear the laughter, whatever, like I heard the laughter from people.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't like, television. Okay.
I was just saying, what's the nature of the feedback? So hearing actors get a lot of feedback from the audience. What's the nature of the feedback when you have deaf actors compared to hearing?
Also, Ati, I thought that was fantastic. I wish we had hours of it. I just wanted to see if you could say a bit more about the exercise with asking them about sound and sign and what the resistance was and what came out of it. Thanks.
First of all, I must correct you. The sign, let's go to drink for Russian is this one. The sign, let's go to drink is this one for Russians.
I learned from my actors. You can join the group. I'll learn from you.
And I found generally the coordination of these people better than, I don't know if it's right to say, general coordination of normal people. So have you seen it?
Yeah, I'd love to hear from Caroline and Gilles more about, now that you have these analyses, what are conclusions about the nature of the coordination at the magic moments that you can now draw for us? Thanks.
And also for Karen and Jill, following what Michael said, I find very intrigued by this suggestion that, if I understood correctly, that when you interview them, they kind of relive the experience. So, for example, in a magical moment, tells you. So this fantastic for me, and I can think about it, and we can apply it in other domain. I wonder if how, from a scientific perspective, which I'm not sure you care about this, how you can rule out the option that this is just by chance. So what is maybe those co-occurrences also happen in different places when they do not describe magic moments. So you need to have some comparison, some statistical. I think it's a valid stance to say we just want to show that this exists. But so I'm wondering to have this discussion.
Can you just, I'm not sure I get, can you just...
I think I was not very clear. What I meant that... I think what you are arguing is that there is a feature in the interview where they, let's say, talk together when they talk about the magical moment. Mm-hmm. However, one can argue that this talking together also happened in other places, and just by chance you kind of focus on this moment. So if you want to comment on this.
All right, then let's hear some responses. I think if I pass these to you, everyone has a microphone.
Okay, I'm attached, yeah. So,
you're attached.
Yeah. Okay, so maybe I'll start with the first one and then the second one by Asaf is for both of us. Mm-hmm. So about the mime, yes. Definitely we don't want only mime, but there is a strong mimetic or pantomimetic element in sign language. And there's a lot of showing things a little more abstractly sometimes, or it's like the Chinese ideograms, you know, that started as little drawings of things and then became more abstract. The sign languages, they differ in how illustrative they are. Israeli, for example, Israeli and Palestinian are more than American. In American Sign Language, there's much more spelling. In Israeli spoken sign language, there's a... So one should expect a lot of mime. And what I call physical theater, which is not exactly mime, but for example, what Ella, the waitress, was doing was miming a lot, signaling and gesturing. When Addis was eating the escargot, he was not miming. He was doing physical theater. That's a different thing. He was like miming the escargot, but the rest of the thing is not miming. So yes, there is an element there, and we want to balance in the product, the interim product, the first show that we will produce, between the different elements that we use that I mentioned before.
Would you like to continue maybe? So we do it like yesterday, 5 minutes.
Okay, mm-hmm. Okay. I think Asaf's question is great because this is, it keeps coming up again and again, not only with the deaf, but also with the deaf, which makes a stronger point, right? So there's almost, I would say, a step or a gap when you flow with your physical work, feeling non-responsible for any particular verbal content. Let's put it that way. Either with deaf people or with hearing people, with actors, with my students who are here, who hear, it's always most difficult to get to the first word, and then to the second word. We did a second of that last night, just to say that in my mind, the word has to emerge from a lot of physical action, and it has to come out of it, and then it will, as you practice, it will become less of a problem. With a sign, as you saw with Addis, the first reaching a sign, he was kind of playing, taking his time, amongst other things, to get to the sign. You could see him thinking when he was turning his back to us, said, okay, where is it leading me? I need to get to a sign. And that is a very important moment that we need to work with, because to get to the sign is difficult. Of course, when we meet an audience, we won't get to that. It'll be familiar. Feedback from the audience. We haven't had, the only thing is my students from the University of Haifa had a field trip, and we showed them about 1 hour of improv. The feedback was fantastic after the show. During the show, and for example, you heard us laughing, and sometimes it's loud because we see it for the first time. They don't hear it, except for Lee, who hears. So they don't hear it. But I believe that there is a sense. They don't look at us either. They have to look at one another. So I believe that there is a sense, either temperature or something, that sends them a feedback. Because when we do discuss their little exercises, vignettes afterwards, usually there is a feeling that they know. Sometimes not. But this connects to something that you asked Pavel, and that there is a... to my mind, I've been working on this kind of work with hearing people for many years, and this is the first time I'm totally a novice, and I learn about deaf culture all the time, and I'm enjoying it tremendously. They're so much more attuned visually because they see peripherally. When I walk with them to work, they warn me, oh, there's a column here, and think like I'm blind. I'm not blind, but relative to them, I may be. And so, yes, they see peripherally. We work a lot on peripheral vision. And also, these people, some of them know one another quite well for quite a time. And even the ones that don't like one another, and there are a few, they work in a way that is, this. Let's put it this way, shortly, this is the best group I've worked with, even compared with very good professional actors. And Aaron, the sound, after we did tastes a lot, and we discovered some fantastic things, and odors, I left sound, of course, naturally, to the end. And a few had no problem of them with that, but a few, and that's I call it the union. The union, they represent deaf culture, capital deaf. They said, sound is not part of my life. I don't need sound. Why do I need to sound? I said, but there are signs. So we started with things like, you see a crowd and you see a police car coming with a siren. That's how it is in Israeli sign language, siren, things like that. You see a dog barking. You see tweeting. So these are things that you don't experience necessarily, but you understand that this is part of a reality that surrounds you, and you're a part of it, even if you don't know what it sounds like. Of course, people who became like Evelyn Glennie, the Scottish composer, deaf composer, she became deaf at 12, so she hears, in her mind, she hears sound. Deaf who were born deaf, you know, they don't. So after strong objections, they yielded, and they're very pleased to see that there's a very rich repertory in their language because they want to be proud of the language that it covers many territories. So I was pleased.
I'm going to try and comment upon the music, language, and when things emerge. I think it all stems from the similarity, the proximity of language and music. Obviously, music is spoken of in linguistic terms, a phrase, a word, a verbal, one-on-one basis conversation can be seen as a verbal improvisation. Just like getting musicians together can be seen as improvisation. So the idea is looking at language in this setup that gets the musicians to re-experience almost, of course not in real time, but to relive almost as when they were actually improvising the music, the musical moment by listening to it. And there are sounds that they are really connected to what they're listening to. Looking at what happens linguistically, semantically, cognitively, the sort of cognitive mappings that emerge, and obviously, this was my little part here, prosodically, intonation-wise, might teach you, might sort of be, you might be able to apply that, what you learn from the linguistic data, to what happens musically, in terms of improvisation. For instance, what I was looking at and trying to show you, with a few slides, looking at the intonation patterns, it's been shown linguistically that these betray a lack of maturity as to what you're going to pronounce, come out with in terms of, you're not sure, so you've got this sort of trilling intonation intervals. It's almost like a question, if you wish. And this, obviously, and then of course you reach a sort of climax where you find the right term and you can be happy, you've got sort of normal, assertive intonation. Well, this can directly be applied to what happens, it seems, what happens musically. So that, but it does stem from proximity, let's say, music and language. I don't know whether this can capture you.
Yeah, just to add, I was thinking when I was listening to one of your response, that actually, so in speech and in discourse, you will have these moments where the people are really, you can feel that they are searching for the right words, for what they, for the, they are really, you can feel online the the construction of what we say in linguistics, the construction of the reference, the construction of what is going now, and also it's something that it's individual, but it's also inter-subjective, because you are especially, well, you're always addressing what you're saying to someone else, and this someone else has expectations. You may know whether you have some ideas about the common ground that you share with the others, and what the other is understanding and expecting from yourself. And actually, this moment of that we can analyze of this moment where there is some disruption, I would say, that there is some pause, some hesitation, some repetition, some international patterns that are very specific, are indicating that in that specific moment there is something that is really, well, there is some creativity, let's say, there is some innovation, there is something that is not just a routine, but something that's really emerging, talking about emergence. And what we think is that it can help when, well, as you said, I don't remember your name, so excuse me, but Leo, yeah. As you said, of course, this kind of phenomenon, we can observe it not only in our session of self-confrontation. That's something that I'm just doing right now. You can hear that sometimes I have some acceleration, I'm pretty confident in what I'm saying, and other moments I'm really searching. And of course, also, it's not my native language. It's also obviously having some effect. But what is interesting is that we didn't really say in the presentation, that the study is built upon some interviews with the same musicians, some session where the musicians are all commenting together the music they played before, some sessions with one musician commenting the studio session he just played before. So it's also that something that we are able to do is also to contrast and to put together all these data and to look at how the same musician, let's say, for instance, this NY3, how he explained, how he reaches the understanding of what he did and what they did together, compared to what he was saying to Amandine in an individual interview. And this helps also getting at, okay, this is something that is just, yeah, it's how it's part of our conversational skills, and it's okay, and we are building our methodology on that. But just with this methodology, we can also focus on some particular moment where it's like these linguistics indicators shows us that there is something here. And there is something here in the collective listening session. And sometimes it fits with there is something here in the musical excerpt they are listening to. Sometimes it's something that is also built via the methodology, and we're also aware of that. For instance, that there are some excerpts that we didn't had time to show you, where, for instance, there is some discrepancies. We were talking about discrepancies before, between what they thought when they were playing and what happened when they are listening. So, for instance, one was thinking, that's the case for the bass player in the second trio, so he was thinking that the others were not listening what he was playing, because it was just tapping, yeah, and he thought, oh, I can hear myself, so that's not interesting, I just stop. But the others could listen, and they were playing, and they were improvising with this ta 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 ta, and so after during the listening, the understanding, the comprehension of what happened is completely different. It can change, and it also can change not only by listening back to the recording, but by listening back to it collectively. Because in another example, you have the first trio. So first of they say, listening first, I thought this was you that I played this chord first. But now listening back to it, I think this was you. This was me. Oh yes, and then oh, it's Mary's fault. Okay, and then. And the incredible thing is that, well, for me, at least, is that at the end of this specific discussion, the three of them agree on what happened, but they needed this, all this different listening to agree. And actually, they also, some of them also changed their opinion about what happened at that moment. For instance, one day, oh, at the end, I thought what I was doing was not very interesting. I was just waiting for some change, and because I didn't know what to do, so I just did that. But now, listening back to it again, that's okay. That was the good decisions.
All right, so unfortunately, we'll have to end here. We're out of time. But